Statements and opinions by guests of Mysterious Radio are not to be considered as endorsed by sponsors or affiliated networks. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this podcast without the express written consent of Mysterious Radio is strictly prohibited.
Get ready for a night filled with conspiracies, strange places, the paranormal, UFOs, legends, and myths from around the world. With your hosts, K-Town, on Mysterious Radio.
All right, welcome back to your choice for all things mysterious. It's Mysterious Radio, and I'm your host, K-Town, and I'm so glad to have you back with me tonight for another edition about the weird and strange. If this is your first time catching the show, please make sure that you subscribe, and then I want you to venture over to our Facebook page and give that a like for us, please. You are always welcome to throw out suggestions for guests or subjects that you would like for us to cover on the show, and you can do that very easily by going to the mysteriousradio.com website and clicking on the contact link. My guest tonight is longtime researcher Lon Strickler, and he's going to be discussing sightings in the Chicago area by the creature known as Mothman. Many of you have heard about these strange sightings before, especially when the movie The Mothman came out. It was very unnerving, right? Well, hopefully Lon can shed some light on this creature for us. And he has written a great book. If you love cryptids and you want to hear more about these encounters, the book is called Mothman Dynasty, Chicago's Winged Humanoid. That book, along with all of Lon's other books, are available on Amazon.com. Also, I get into some discussions about Bigfoot. I couldn't resist. All right, so are you ready? Let's bring him out. All right, my special guest tonight is author and researcher Lon Strickler, and he's going to be discussing his book called Mothman Dynasty, Chicago's Winged Humanoid. Lon, I want to thank you very much for joining me tonight on Mysterious Radio.
Well, thanks for having me.
This is your first time, so please take a moment, if you don't mind, to tell my listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got started in your research of these bizarre encounters.
Well, I've been doing this for about 40 years now, and I guess it all started when I was younger. I'm an intuitive, and I discovered that I was an intuitive while out on the Gettysburg battlefield, which I don't live too far from. So as time progressed, this was in the mid-70s. Paranormal investigations were not a big thing back then. So I decided to set out on my own and do some investigations after I'd gotten out of high school. And I moved down to Maryland. I lived near Baltimore for about 40 years. And I did a few cases here and there for just spiritual hauntings and so forth, just helping people out. So what happened was, in 1981, I had an encounter with a Bigfoot in Sykesville, Maryland. And when that occurred, this was, I knew of Bigfoot, but I knew nothing about it. I wasn't investigating cryptids and other type of beings. So I decided I wanted to find out what I saw. So that's kind of where it started at. So I continued to kind of delve into a lot of different phenomena, and it progressed until I finally started writing blog in 2005, which is Phantoms and Monsters, and I've been going on since then.
All right, very good. Now, Lon, if you don't mind, to take a little moment, I'm very interested in knowing a little bit more about your Bigfoot sighting. Tell us exactly what you saw.
Well, this was in May of 1981, and I was fly fishing on the south branch of the Patapsco River, which is about a mile downstream from Sykesville, Maryland. And as I was fishing, I noticed a dog across the river, and it wasn't really wide. I guess the river was only about 30 foot wide at that point. And I was actually standing in the river fly fishing, and I saw this dog across the way in the bushes on the other bank moving in and around. And suddenly I heard the dog yelp. So it caught my attention. I looked over there, and I saw something standing up in the weeds. Now, the weeds were fairly high, but I got a pretty good look at this thing from the waist up, and it was basically a hairy hominid. It was a man-like being. It had a lot of hair on it. As it walked to my left out of the weeds, I got a better look at it. And I would describe it as looking like a Neanderthal. It was it was more man than human, but it definitely wasn't human. And it turned around and started walking up toward the woods. And that's about all I had. I mean, that was about the entire process. I didn't know at first what was going on. I figured, well, I better report this. So I got in my car and I drove into town and called the police department. And by the time I got back, which was just several minutes later, there were police officers already and other officials were already there. So I figure they've been tracking this thing for whatever reason. And, you know, it always fascinated me why I saw what I did, what it was, what the situation was. And then I just started going into investigating this.
Okay. So had people been reporting sightings of Bigfoot in that same area? I mean, had it been on the news or anything like that?
Yeah, back in the early 70s, there had been a flap of sightings in the Sykesville area. They dubbed it the Sykesville Monster. And it was about the same time that the Hurricane Agnes had come through, and there was a lot of flooding in the area. But people were seeing this being along the riverfront, and some of the houses in the area were broken into. Some of the chicken pens and stuff up and down the river were broken into. So the what happened was the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper got wind of what was going on, and they broke the story. And, you know, it was kind of became a legendary thing. I really didn't know about it because when I moved down there, I knew nothing about this. And in fact, when I had my sighting, I had no idea of any of this backstory. So I actually went and re-interviewed a lot of the witnesses from the original flap and a few others that weren't interviewed before, to try to get an idea of what this was, what was going on. And in fact, there have still been sightings off and on in the area.
How interesting. All right. Now, the Mothman is legendary. And the first time I actually heard about people witnessing this creature was after the movie The Mothman Prophecies came out with Richard Gere. So I don't know how true they stay to these encounters, but nevertheless, it was disturbing. But for those that may not know, can you tell us what the Mothman is?
Yeah, in the late 60s, 66 and 1967, in the town of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, people were seeing this humanoid being that had the shape of a large moth or a large butterfly-like being, insectoid with large red eyes. There was a specific area called the TNT area. It was actually the West Virginia Ordnance Works, which actually was a teen hangout. I mean, the factory had been closed by then. And that's where the first sighting was. And in fact, several other sightings after that occurred in the same area. So this went on for off and on for about a year. And there was a lot of other weird things going on too. UFO activity, men in black, people in men in dark suits started being seen around town. Then in December of 1967, there was a tragedy on the Silver Bridge where it collapsed and 46 people lost their lives. And, you know, being a small town, I guess I believe that, you know, this, they were just looking for an excuse for why this happened. And, you know, someone had said that they seen the Mothman, is what they dubbed this creature, over the bridge near the time of the collapse. And that's where it got this moniker as being a harbinger. So, you know, that's kind of where the story went to. I have no doubt people were seeing something. And in fact, I have received reports out of Point Pleasant, Mason County in the area since then, and still do get occasional reports.
So you said they were looking for, you thought that they were looking for something to blame that tragedy on. So you don't believe that that had anything to do with what happened? Or are you saying you don't believe the person that actually saw that creature on that bridge?
No, I believe somebody may have seen something, but I don't believe the tragedy is the result of this this being a harbinger. You know, there have been other tragedies over the years where people have also stated, and mostly after the fact, that they've seen a flying being in the area. I think the only other tragedy where it was documented before the accident was at Chernobyl. People had seen what they called the Blackbird of Chernobyl. But there were other tragedies too, bridge collapses, Fukushima nuclear plant during the earthquake and the tsunami. People swore that they seen these flying beings above the power plant. But it's usually reported after the fact, so I don't really believe that there's much to the harbinger theory.
Now, you said that sightings of this winged or winged creatures are not a new occurrence in the Chicago area. So can you elaborate on that a bit for us?
Well, there were three sightings back in 2011 within the city, and all three of those sightings were described as flying being, humanoid-like being with membrane-like wings. There was a photograph captured which kind of looked like what somebody had described as looking like a large sugar glider. I don't know what that was. It didn't look like a bat wing being. It was something that I really can't discern what it was. But as far as other photographs, there were none taken back then. And in fact, during this flap that we had this past year, and it is continuing, we've only got one photograph, and that's not a discernible photograph as well. But anyway, there has been a history of flying beings in and around the Chicago area. There have been several sightings of what people call the Thunderbirds, or larger winged-like bird, or possibly a being. There have also been pterosaur-type sightings, something similar to that of a pterodactyl or a prehistoric-type bird. So this is nothing new for the Chicago, Illinois metro area. So the fact that these sightings have been occurring in the Chicago metro area is probably, you know, not that dramatic as far as compared to other sightings in the area before. Chicago's got a long history of paranormal activity and a lot of weird things, a lot of UFO activity. But the fact that this is all going on and so many sightings have been reported within a short period of time makes it is historical. It's a historical sighting. It's probably the largest sighting, group of sightings since Point Pleasant.
Okay. For the creature that people label the Mothman, has it been sighted in other parts of the country besides Chicago and West Virginia?
Oh, yeah. It's There are three sightings in the Pasco County, Florida, and near around Zephyr Hills. And that was going on at the same time this was going on last year. We've had a lot of sightings in Quebec and Ontario and northern New York State over the past couple of years. I had some sightings down in Texas. But for the most part, all these sightings are very similar to each other. Many of them had the red eyes, the bat-like wings, and the size comparison is very close. 5 to 6 foot tall being, kind of thin in body size, body description, and the 10 to 12 foot wingspan with membrane-like wings. Now, some of the other sightings within Chicago, in fact, the earlier sightings, they were described as being owl-like or Mothman-like. Mm-hmm. So there have been some variations. I believe there have been more than one being in the Chicago area. In fact, I believe there's at least three of them. Now, this has
Mothman. You're talking about there's more than one.
Well, yeah, these winged beings. You know, I don't really like to use the word Mothman because it really doesn't look like the Mothman. I've been calling it the Chicago Phantom for whatever reason. They needed a moniker other than Mothman, I thought. But I mean, it's a winged humanoid of some type. But for the most part, the wings are bat membrane type wings.
All right. So with this creature, well, let me just ask you, what do you think this creature is?
My personal feeling is, and we've got a lot of working theories with this, but my personal feeling is it's a flesh and blood being, but it's not of this world. It's not of this earth plane, bringing itself onto our earth plane from another dimension, another reality. Now, why and how it's doing that, I have no idea. You know, there's there have been lots of theories on interdimensional beings for many, many years. I believe that some cryptids, in fact, have extra dimensional abilities, able to come in and out of portals, wormholes, whatever you want to call it. I think that may be what's going on here. Now, why are they being summoned somehow by individuals or some other means? I have no idea. This is a continuing question and something we've been working on.
All right. So why the Chicago area?
I have no idea.
There's nothing significant as far as geographical aspects of it or anything like that?
Well, there some people have thought that it had to do with the with Lake Michigan and being its proximity to Lake Michigan. There's a lot of water, a lot of rivers and such in the area. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know. You know, the sightings recently have been moving northward. We've had several sightings in Wisconsin. We had one in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago. So, you know, it's kind of branched out, but we're still having sightings within the Chicago metro area.
One thing I didn't notice, Lon, in your book is that when I was reading through the eyewitness accounts, these were coming, or some of them were coming, through the UFO clearinghouse. Why is that?
Well, actually, UFO clearinghouse is a website run by my friend Manuel Navarrete, and he's known within the UFO community in Chicago. So it was convenient for a lot of people. You know, in the beginning, his website was probably the only one other than MUFON to take sighting reports. So when Manuel contacted me and was letting me know that these were coming, and I started putting it out there, and we've both been receiving the reports since then.
Okay, so yeah, you're saying MUFON was taking not only UFO reports, but sightings of these cryptids as well.
Yeah, MUFON has had sighting reports come into them. They really don't like to investigate them for whatever reason. That's something that's been going on with them for a long time. It seems that anything paranormal or something other than UFO, you know, they just don't really care about it. But unfortunately, when I started getting involved with it and it started going, you know, continuing and becoming more well known, well, then MUFON decided that, well, maybe we should start getting involved with this somehow. So I've been getting some pushback from them, but it's nothing unusual. This is something I'm kind of used to.
Okay, so if someone wanted to report seeing one of these, would they still go through MUFON to do that, or is there some type of research group?
Well, most of the reports are coming through me directly. They either call me, the witnesses either call me or use my email. Most all my reports have my contact information on them. I'd say 90% of the reports have come through me.
Okay.
Correctly.
All right. So if something is close to you, are you actually going out and looking at that, or how do you go about your investigations?
Well, I don't live in Chicago. I live in Pennsylvania, actually. And but I've got a team out there.
Okay.
I've got a task force. We've got about 8 people that are working with us. Manuel is part of the team. Tobias Whalen, his wife Emily Whalen, have been working with us. They're researchers in the area. Rosemary Ellen Golly has been working with the group. So, we all take reports if we get them, bounce them off each other, kind of work with each other with the ideas. And the people that live in the area go out and visit the area, talk to the individuals, and verify the sightings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are the sightings happening more frequently in the daytime or the nighttime?
Oh, they mostly happen in the evening.
Okay. Now, so what do you think in this day and age of digital technology, cameras everywhere, that no one's able to really get a good video or a picture of it?
Well, I believe there's a couple reasons, and, you know, I can understand it. First of all, there's the shock value. These sightings are fairly fleeting. They don't last very long. By the time somebody fumbles in their pockets and gets the camera out and turns it on, this thing's gone. Nighttime sightings, hard to get a picture at night. You know, there's a lot of reasons. You know, the people that have, where I believe they had an opportunity to get a photograph, when I question them about that, the thing they always tell me, and it doesn't fail, that they weren't even thinking about taking a picture. They were so shocked by what they were seeing, they never even thought about taking a photograph.
Right. I can totally understand that. All right. My special guest tonight is author and researcher Lon Strickler, and we are discussing his book, Mothman Dynasty. And I will have more for you when we return right after this. And now, Lon, let's talk a little bit more about the people reporting the sightings. Can you give us some background on them? Are they professionals, housewives, or children seeing this, or what?
You know, the eyewitnesses run the gamut, socioeconomic, race, creed, everything. I mean, it's just made up of everybody. We've got police officers as well that are made reports, professionals, a couple of attorneys, just regular everyday people.
Okay. Do you know of any other phenomena that people have experienced in connection with these sightings?
Not that I can make a connection, no.
Okay. Let's talk about eyewitness accounts. Now, there is one, and I don't know if you remember this, Lon, so let me know if you don't. But October 2011, there was a report, and this one was forwarded from the UFO Clearinghouse as well. It's about a man and his wife that traveled to Chicago and decided to take a ride through his old neighborhood. Do you remember that case?
Yeah, that was the first sighting. That was the sighting in which the photograph was taken.
Let's talk about that photograph for a moment, because something standing there, and I don't want to say is a dummy, but it looks like a dummy. What was that thing standing there in that picture?
That was a statue of an Indian, an American Indian. I you know, I don't know the full story behind it. It's apparently a well-known landmark in the area. I don't believe it's still there, but it just happened to be seen at the time. I guess I think the witnesses were looking at this, statue or this, whatever this is, and they happened to notice this thing flying by, and that's when they took the photograph.
Okay. So you included the picture in your book. I want to know if you actually had it looked at by someone else. Did you have it examined to see what they thought it was or anything like that?
Yeah, there have been several people that have looked over the years, and quite frankly, nobody can give us a definitive answer what it really is.
Okay. Can you tell us about a case that you know of that had some type of, you know, some detail to it that was rather shocking?
Well, there were a couple of incidents where where people got up and close to this thing. I guess the most dramatic was the incident that occurred on the Lakeshore Drive. This was a couple who were in Chicago. They were actually from D.C. The woman's mother lived in Chicago. She lived in the condominium on the lakeshore. And it was in the evening, and they were walking around the neighborhood, I guess around 9:30 or so. I forget the exact time. But they were walking along Lakeshore Drive, and this flying being flew in front of them from the direction of Lake Michigan, flew in front and over them, and went up over the trees, up to the building, or alongside the building. Now, the building, I think, is like 20 stories high. And this thing went up and stopped and hovered midair, like it was looking through one of the windows. And as they watched it for a couple seconds, it leaned back and dove back down toward the trees. By that time, they're running towards the entrance to the condominium. They have no idea what this is. So they turned a corner heading towards the entrance to the condo, and this being ascended or descended in front of them. It just hovered with its wings spread out. It hovered about 5 foot above the sidewalk, and they were maybe about 15 foot in front of it. And they described it as a man-like being, humanoid, with bat-like wings, membrane wings, dark in color. The body was shiny, like it was maybe wet or moist, and that the legs were vibrating. It had large red eyes that kind of faded in and out in intensity. The woman, she lost her ability to stand. She actually went down to the ground. This thing hovered for, I don't know how many seconds, 8 to 10 seconds. And in fact, some other people who were across the street had taken they saw some flash come from over there. So somebody probably took a photograph. There was another guy there in a delivery truck who reacted seeing this thing as well. So as they were standing here, this thing ascended. Slowly ascended with these wings spread out like it was something, you know, it was just hovering. No flapping of the wings. And as it got to an apex, it took off. And the husband had to carry his wife into the condominium. So that was probably the most dramatic sighting.
Okay. Wow. All right. Now, any of the sightings in Chicago, are they thought to be connected with something, you know, bad that has occurred there, like in the West Virginia sightings?
Not yet. You know, there hasn't been any type of tragedy or anything. You know, Chicago's got a reputation for being a fairly violent city. And one of the areas where a lot of this violence has taken place is the Little Village area. And we've had several sightings in that area. Now, I don't know if there's anything connected to that. It's one of the things we've been looking into. You know, other than that, I really can't think of anything. You know, I've talked to several police officers who are aware of what this thing. There were some police officers who actually witnessed it. They don't have any idea either. So
some people think that this creature could be demonic in nature. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't think it's demonic. I don't think it's an evil type of being. I don't think it's got any malevolency to it. I just think it wants to be seen for some reason. I don't know. You know, I haven't had any reports where anybody was physically assaulted, but there were people that really scared, and this thing had got real close to them. The sighting up in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago, a couple were in their car, and this thing dramatically landed in front of the car, and when they tried to get out of there, it chased them and kept descending in front of the car, and it was pretty dramatic.
Lon, do you know about any known sightings around the same time as 9/11?
Not that I know of, no.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm wondering if any pilots have reported seeing this creature or any kind of winged humanoid.
No, we haven't had any reports from pilots or anybody flying any craft.
Okay. I want to ask you, out of all of the creatures that you have investigated over the years, can you give us an honest take on which ones you think are possibly very real?
Oh, I think they're all real to a point. You know, this Mothman phenomena, flying humanoid phenomena, I think is definitely real. It's just too many people are seeing it. Like I said before, it's flesh and blood, I believe, but I don't believe it's indigenous to our earth plane. I think that's also the case in a lot of these cryptids, Bigfoot in particular. I think there may actually be some indigenous populations of Bigfoot. I'm speaking now for North America, in particular, the Pacific Northwest, some areas of Texas, in Florida.
Okay, why would you think one could survive in the Pacific Northwest without being detected there?
Well, it's actually a living group that is indigenous to our earth plane. But I think in other areas where these Bigfoot are seen, I think there's a strong possibility they may have some type of interdimensional abilities.
Okay. I've heard that. So you're not alone in your thoughts about that. Okay. All right. So do you know, while we're talking about Bigfoot, Lon, have you seen any compelling evidence as far as pictures? There's a ton of pictures, but, you know, a lot of them are not real. But have you seen anything compelling?
Well, I think the two best examples are the Patterson-Gimlin film and the Freeman film. I think they're probably the two best as far as recent images, photographs. Because of our technology and photographic technology, I think there's too much of a chance of these things being fake somehow. I'll be honest with you, I haven't seen anything in the possibly the past 5-6 years that I can honestly say I believe were authentic. I mean, it could be, but you got to be very wary of it nowadays because of the technology. So, yeah, I, you know, those are the two examples I can give you.
I want to ask you about the Patterson film there. So what about that one convinces you that that is real? That's been scrutinized like you wouldn't believe, but many people believe that they could in that that time pull off such a hoax, make everyone believe that that was a real creature. What convinces you otherwise?
I just don't believe it could have been pulled off at that time, you know, back in the 60s like that. You know, there was no ability to manipulate film. You know, that was like 8mm film. It wasn't digital. So, of course, you know, what you got is, you know, what you saw is what you got. And as far as somebody wearing a suit, you know, I think it'd take a lot of imagination for somebody to come up with a suit of a female type Bigfoot to go ahead and use that as an example as far as wanting to hoax someone. The size, stride, and the musculature and the overall appearance, it just looks too real to me. I haven't really seen or heard of an argument that has debunked the Patterson-Gimlin film.
Okay, so being that we know nothing about these creatures, Lon, I want to get your take on how that that creature actually reacted to them, because it's pretty nonchalant, to be honest with you. You know, it kind of just turned and looked and kept walking. Is that something that you would expect from, you know, a creature like this?
Well, I think the situation kind of dictates the reaction. There's some thought by some researchers that she had actually hidden a juvenile and tried to steer Patterson and Gimlin away from the area, and that she probably would have come back and retrieved the juvenile. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that's why she reacted the way she did. You know, of course, she wasn't going to attack them. You know, she you know, didn't know how they would react. But I think her reaction was normal, honestly, under the situation. And I think that's what happened.
Looking at that creature, you believe that that creature is of this earthly plane and nothing interdimensional or anything like that?
I mean, it could be, but I think in that part of the United States, Northern California up into the Pacific Northwest, I think those populations are indigenous populations. It's a high concentration of beings, even up into Vancouver Island, up in the British Columbia. I think those populations are indigenous. I also believe the populations in Florida, down in Southwest Florida, what they call the skunk ape, I think those are indigenous. Mm-hmm. And as well, I think some of the hairy hominids in Arkansas, East Texas, I think that may be indigenous populations as well.
Have you ever seen or heard of any reports coming out of any other countries, like Russia, for instance? They call it the Yeti, I guess, over there. But have you seen anything in other countries?
Image-wise, not really, but there have been several convincing reports of what they call the, you know, the Yeti, the Russian Yeti, or the Almas, or the Masti, in the Urals or into Siberia. There have been, of course, the Yeti sightings in Nepal and Tibet, and down into Southwest Asia. There's also there's a smaller version of a hairy hominid that has been reported, and I think that very well may be indigenous populations as well. So, yeah, I think Central and Southwest Europe and into China as well, the Yiren. I think there could be populations, and you know, I think there very well is populations of these hairy hominids.
Okay, you mentioned the Ural Mountains where the Dyatlov Pass incident occurred. Have you looked at that picture that was reported to be captured by one of the skiers?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, there is a traditional, some legends of these hairy hominids in that area by the natives. If that's what, you know, as far as if that's what happened, I don't know.
Authentic picture or not?
There are a lot of theories about it. The picture itself, yeah, I guess it could be. It's kind of fuzzy, but I guess there's a possibility.
All right. Very good. Lon, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I want to give you an opportunity now to tell my listeners where they can find more information about you and your books.
Well, my website is phantomsandmonsters.com, and we have a daily newsletter, which is free. All you got to do is go to the website and sign up for it. My books can be found on Amazon. All you got to do is search my name, Lon Strickler, and they'll all come up. I've got 6 books currently, working on a few others. I also do a radio show, The Existence of Strange Things, on Radio Memphis, which is presented each Friday night at 11 o'clock Eastern.
All right, very good. You gotta love that. Many blessings to you, and I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, that's a wrap for tonight's edition. I want to thank Lon Strickler again for joining us. Remember, you can pick up Lon's book, Mothman Dynasty, Chicago's Winged Humanoid, on Amazon. I want to thank my producer tonight, Kim, and the Mysterious Radio team. I am your host, K-Town. Have a great night, and I will see you next time on Mysterious Radio.
Like the show? Get more Mysterious Radio on our website. And don't forget to visit our Twitter and Facebook page.